day of Kislev, the fourth candle, fourth day of Chanukah. Can you hear me okay? All right, wonderful. Hope everybody is having a wonderful Chanukah so far. Nothing like being able to celebrate the illumination of the Chanukah candles. You could just literally stare at them all night and be mindful and appreciate the gratitude that we have, the thanks that we have to the Almighty, and appreciating the good things, the blessings, benevolence that we are showered with. Okay, so let's get started. Did everybody get the email with the source material sent to you? Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jason, for doing that. Wonderful. So let's get started. Okay. First and foremost, I would like to thank our very generous sponsors of our contemporary cases in Shas class this morning, sponsored this morning by Jane and Sid Savitz, in commemoration of the art sites of Jane's beloved parents, Hai Shields, Chaim Ben Fivish, and Mildred Shields, Mindel Bat Eliyahu. Their neshama should have an aliyah, and the merit and the schus of studying of Torah together. And Barabim, it should be a schus, a merit for their neshamas, and a merit for the entire family. Thank you so much for your generous sponsorship. We appreciate it greatly. So we're going to transition out of what we've been doing over the past few weeks. Chanukah, of course, is our theme, is our topic. We're discussing Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin, and understanding the different levels of elevated enhancement and why that's so, and the sources for that, and some of the shaklavatari, as we like to say, the give and the take, the back and the forth, the ins and the outs, the nuances, the formative and fulfillment of basic kium hamitzvah, and then the enhancements. What's Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin. But let's transition out. As I mentioned last week, what we would do is talk a little bit of the hashkafa, some of the philosophy that's behind some of what it is that we commemorate. And I want to share with you a number of sources here, which are really a continuation. Today is source 20. We begin with source 20 because it's a packet that we've been doing over the course of these past number of weeks. And at the end of this class, which will culminate this Chanukah series, we'll give you an opportunity to have 28 sources. Hopefully will be for review for your resource using in the future, be able to share with your families over the next number of days of Chanukah, and just for your own study to chazer to review. So what we're going to do is transition out of the formative shaklavatari and go into a little bit of philosophy, a little bit of hashkafa, to give a little bit of perspective, some of the things which we basically know, but to understand on a little bit of a different level, some great sources to share this morning. So let's begin with this. So usually we know that when we celebrate the Yom Tov, when we celebrate the holidays, so that, you know, what we celebrate is more or less the commemoration or the reminding ourselves of one miracle, one mitzvah, or are centered on one theme. So for example, the Zman Matan Torisenu is the holiday of Shavuos, Zman Cheresenu, the end of the holiday of Pesach, Zman Simchasenu, the time of Sukkot, and the corresponding holidays. But there's really like one theme, right? The holidays as they relate to the mitzvos, the sitting in the sukkah, the shaking the dalad minim, the matzah, the maror, the dalad kosos, and the Limud HaTorah, and all of the others, Purim, the Megillah, the Shalach Manos, the Suda, and Matanis Le'Avyonim. So you have like the commemoration, which is basically one theme. There's a theme of the holiday. We have that. This is the reason why we commemorate. This is what we remember, the Anani Akovo, the Sukkot, Mamish. You could have a conversation, a dispute in the Gemara as to which one it is. But in essence, there's usually one time. Now, there obviously are exceptions, and how they coalesce with each other and coexist with one another. But here's what's interesting. With Chanukah, even though, you know, what's become popular is to really think of the miracle of the menorah, the miracle of the oil. If you go into the Sfarim store, if you go to Eichlers.com, or you go to the stores that sell the paraphernalia that you need for Chanukah. So what you need for Chanukah is you need oil, you need a menorah. And that seems to be the theme, right? If you ask children when they come back from school, what's the theme? What's the victory? What's the story? The Pach Shemen, the oil, the cruse of oil that lasts for 8 days, only was meant to last for one. But we know that we actually have two commemorations. We have two miracles that are our focus, that we're meant to think of. And even though we have two, one usually gets a little bit more overlooked. And we have here the commemoration of one, the military, the victory over the Avonim, the victory over the Greeks. And the second one, of course, is the spiritual one, the miracle of the menorah. They're both of them. And so we're going to learn here a little bit this morning is what are these two, a little bit more, which of course the basics we know. But more importantly, which is what's going to be a little bit more fun, is what is the relationship between them? Like, why is there two? And what is this relationship? And what we'll come to understand is maybe that even though there's two, there's really one. There's always one general theme. And that general theme is what we're going to learn here together. So let's begin with just the basics. The basics are, first and foremost, is this military victory. The Jewish revolt begins as a small band of Kohanim, of priests, Hashmonaim. They catalyze, right, the resistance against the Ivanim, against the Greek, you know, religious oppression. No bris milah, no circumcision, no Rosh Chodesh, no Shabbos, no Talmud Torah. There's an oppression, a religious oppression. Of course, we know that that oppression was very distinct and unique from what Haman was trying to do. Haman wanted us dead, whereas the Ivanim, the Greeks, they were fine for us to remain alive, but just wanted us to assimilate. Hellenism, of course, was rampant. That's what Antiochus was pushing, and at a very fast pace. And this idea of religious oppression, of course, was the catalyst for which the Kohanim, the priests, the resistance that they fought against. And they regained control of the Beis HaMikdash, of the temple in Yerushalayim, and eventually carve out a Jewish sovereignty against all odds, the formidable challenges that they face, but nonetheless, they're to be victorious. And of course, this military victory is memorialized in the additional tefillah that we add in our daily service, our daily davening on Hanukkah. And this is true not only when it comes to Shemoneh Esrei, three times a day, but it's also in Birchas HaMazon, when we bench. That is in source number 20, just for copy and paste. Al HaNisim v'Al HaPorkan, of course, is the days of Matisyo ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Hashmonai Vanov, Kisham the Malchus Yavan HaRishon. Of course, we know the story that's just summarized in this Al HaNisim tefillah. We praise Hashem for the miraculous military victory. This tefillah says nothing about the Pach Shemen. It says nothing about the cruise of oil. And this is Nashkicham Torasecho Lavira Mechuke Ritzenecha. What happened? The decrees were that we should forget our Torah, that we should turn away from the statutes of the will of God, the commands, the precepts, the laws. And you, Ribbono Shalom, in your abundant mercy, stood by them in their time of distress. Has nothing to do with the oil. Has nothing to do with, you know, them being, you know, the demise, them being killed and dying. But rather, they should not have a connection to Torah. They should not have a connection to mitzvah. Now, here's where things get interesting. Raftas rivam, dantas dinam, nekamtas nikmosam, giborim, chaloshim, rabim, ma'atim, tmeim, tahayim, rishayim, tzadikim, zeidim, adeski, sorsecha. Like, we rattle off a lot of these things that recognize what this miracle is. Like, what is it? Was it would have been just sufficient to say that you stood by us, your abundant mercy in the time of our distress. But no, we articulated what it is, the cause, how you judged the enemies, you avenged the cause, you delivered the strong into the hands of the weak, the many and the few, the impure, right, into the hands of the pure, the wicked into the hands of the diligent, so on and so forth. V'achar kein, and after this, your sons entered into the Beis HaMikdash, lidvir beisech, ofinos heichalecha, v'taras mikdashecha, and purified our sanctuary, kindled the lights, v'idliku neres b'chatzus kodshecha, and therefore v'kavu shmonas yimechanuka elu lahodos, v'lahalil l'shimcha gadol. And these are days of not just reflection, but of expressing hodos and halel, expressing gratitude and thanks, and of course praise. And that's what we say, as the Gemara Nerchin explains, that we say a halel sholem, we don't say a chatzi halel, we say a full halel. And lahodos is to give gratitude and thanks, not just at davening, not just during benching, but throughout the course of the holiday. It's thematic. It's what we think about. This is just the liturgy that we've come, of course, to know and appreciate and know as part of our davening. But here's what's interesting. By describing the miracles in terms of that it does, the Al HaNisim tefillah that we daven sheds light on the way the miracle worked. How did the miracle work? That the mighty were in the hands of the weaker. The few were dominant over the many. So on and so forth. You get the point. But here's what's interesting. Rabbi Tzio Solomon writes in Matnas Chaim in source number 21, why were they, when you think about who in history was Zocha to be victorious, why did the Hashmonaim merit to win the war? Like, what was specific about them? But more importantly, like, why are all of these examples articulated? So we know, look at source number 21. I have underlined for you some of the Hebrew, which I think is exceptional. So we know here he just mentions just the tefillah that said, the fact that he says that here in the Al-Nisim V'al-Niflos, etc. Look here, it says in the underline, Rabbim Makshim, that there are many who ask the following. We know this. Bishlama gibor biad chaloshim v'rabim biad ma'atim hare zeh neis nifla, zeh neis opela. What does that mean? Of course, we know the fact that the weak conquered the mighty and that the few conquered the many was a pella. What's a pella? It was wondrous. It was extraordinary. So, but the question, of course, he asks, Meaning, what is so miraculous about the impure falling into the hands of the pure? Like, why is that so miraculous? The evil falling into the hands of the righteous and the immoral falling into the hands of those who that those who are the ones who toil in Torah. So what's the reason? He says something very nice. It is possible to suggest that with the sages coming to tell us, it can be said that our sages are coming to teach us how how was it that the miraculous victory of the few over the many came to be? Like, how did that happen? The part of the liturgy that we say is more understandable, that it makes sense to say that that's a pella, that that's a miracle. How did that even come to be? I'll tell you how it came to be. Because Shabo Chazal B'zeh, You know why? You know how it came to be that the mighty fell to the hands of the weaker, or the many fell to the hands of the few? Very simply, the Chashmonaim were pure, they were righteous, they were Oskei B'Talmud Torah, they were Oskei Torah. That's why they merited the miracle. They merited the miracle. It's the how, he explains. It's not just the what, but it's the how. What was it? Here's a list of things that we can be mindful and reflect on the miracles as they took place. Wow, look at the circumstances. Look at the statistics. Look how unlikely our success was. Nobody says something differently. Here you should know. You know why the Chashmonaim of all types and all people were Zocha, why they merited? Because they themselves were pure. They themselves were righteous. They themselves toiled. And actually, it's not that it's a miracle. It's indicative of the character of the type of people that they were. And the fact that they were those people, here's what you have. You have what we have called Mida Keneged Mida, merit that comes as a result of something that a person does, an attribute that is rewarded in kind. So therefore, you have Mida Keneged Mida, Yischar Keneged, the mitzvah. What is it that they did? They were pure. They were righteous. They were toiling in Torah. So therefore, this extraordinary circumstances of unconscionable, what seems to be statistic success, was the mighty are now brought to their knees by the less, the weaker, and the many are now, these 50,000 with, you know, the elephant tanks that they used in those days, the warfare, the suggestion of which it was impossible, but nonetheless, they were able to, but for one reason only. That's sort of what Zio Solomon says in source number 21, which is why they were Zocha to it. Why did they merit winning the war? And just understand, what would be the big kunz? What's so great about the fact that the evil into the hands of the righteous and the immoral in the hands of the Talmud, of those who study Torah? Because that's just telling us how it was able to be, how the miracle was able to be. When we are able to see sustained miraculous events, it means that there's some type of merit somewhere. There's what we call schus avos, schus imohos, and the merit of our fathers, the merit of our mothers. That is how we promulgate the successes and the continuity of our people, that is resting on the shoulders of those who came before us. So this is the military, you know, victory that we remember, ala nisim v'ala porkan, and our shmona esrei, and our birchas hamozon, and through the recitation of Hallel. That's number one. Number two is, of course, the miracle of the menorah. And of course, this is how Hanukkah is best known, the miracle of the one-day supply of oil that burns for 8 days, central miracle that we directly commemorate in the lighting of the menorah. Like, we don't, it could be you'll have 8 days of Hanukkah and you'll not even talk once about the military victory. You'll say it in davening, but you might not necessarily know what you're saying. That's the long, lengthy paragraph that you got to whip right through and sometimes maybe peruse just past all the words. But even if you say all the words, it's certainly not the central theme. It's not necessarily spoken about. What's the menorah lighting? So this we know, you should just see it inside. Source 22, my Chanukah, shenichnesu yavanim lehechel, that of course they defiled the oil that was there, and the dynasty of the Chashmonaim, they grew strong, they defeated them. Of course, we know that there was, after they searched, they found one flask with the chasima, the signature, the signet of the Kohen Gadol, that had been set aside. And of course, we know that it burned not for 1 day, it burns for 8 days. And that's what they did. These are the days that were days for Hallel, days of Thanksgiving, so on and so forth. But here's an interesting, just parenthetical aside. I mentioned yesterday my halacha gems. Those of you who didn't have a chance to hear it, you can look at it, listen to it later. But it's interesting. We only mention the military victory, either when we daven Shemoneh Esrei or when we have a bread meal. What happens if you have a snack? This is the parenthetical class aside point, which is, what happens if you have a snack? You have a cookie, you have a bowl of cereals, you have something that necessitates ala michya ve'ala kakola. We do not say it. Now, why is that so? Halacha gems from last night. I'll share with you outside and offline for anybody who's interested. But it's interesting just to note that that's only where it's done. So here's the cruse of oil that's found. It's the Gemara in Source 22, famous Gemara in Shabbos, Masechet Shabbos, Mai Chanukah, the Sugya, and the Perek of Bamim Adlikin that we recite in part Friday night as part of the Kabbalah Shabbos pre-Mairiv service. And in that Perek and in that section, the section of Mai Chanukah, and this is the story, this exact paragraph is quoted in the Mishnah Berurah and Shulchan Aruch, reminding us of this is the miracle. So we understand that the miracle was that the oil lasted for 8 days. But why was such a miracle necessary? Like, why 8 days? You know, we know that Shammai and Hillel, as we learned last time, Machlokas, whether or not you like white 1 to 8 or 8 to 1. So we understood last week, based on A, this beautiful state learning of Rabbi Zevin and Rabbi Beryl Wine, that sources 18 and 19 from the last week's class. So the notion of just the potential of the koyach versus the actual, which is bepoel, that Shammai represents the potential of it, the potential of how many days of miracle could the oil last. Now, what's interesting about that, which we never answered, is that how was it that Shammai knew that the oil would last for 8 days? Meaning, if you know something has the potential to be successful, like, good, maybe it's unending, maybe it's never, it's everlasting, it's never without pause. So that's true. So how did he know 8 days? The fact that Hillel says 1 to 8, Milam Bekodesh Ve'ein Moridin, that we elevate the stature, but we do not diminish. Good. So that we've understood, that we come to appreciate. But how was it that Shammai understood 8? Like, what was the understood potential? The potential, the koyach of the oil to last for that time, but how 8 days? So here we have two statements here in the Beis Yosef Tor and Shulchan Aruch. Rav Yosef Karo, why an 8-day miracle? Why was that necessary? The first is Vatam, Shutzuchu Lahadlik Shmoni Yamim, Ma'oso Pach. Why was it that they needed to light the menorah for 8 days from that very container of oil? So this is maybe what Shammai understood. Because you have to understand, here's where you have the first link. The first link between these two commemorations, these two miracles that take place, and we're going to link them even more. But here's the first link here in Shulchan Aruch. In the Torah, Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo says, why? Why Shmoni Yamin Ma'osa Pach from the only one flask? Mipnei Shekol Yisrael Haya Bechezkas Tomei. You know why? Because all of the Jewish people had a Chezkas Tomei. What's Chezkas Tomei? They had the status of Bechezkas Tomei. They were beholden to what their impure status was. They were Becheskes Tamei Mesim. Why is it Becheskes Tamei Mesim? That maybe they were all Tamei Mesim because they were in a war. And because they were now ritually impure because of their close proximity to a corpse, to Tamei Mesim. So they were Tamei. So why is it Becheskes Tamei? Because not everybody necessarily touched a corpse. It was necessarily under an ohel, a tent. So that doesn't necessarily mean they all were, but they have a chezkas tamei, meaning if there's a rov, there's a ruba de ruba, if the majority of the people had encountered in such a way, we have to assume that we go klape the rov, the majority of the people have this in halacha as well, that 60 times the amount, if that's what the case is, if a squirt of milk goes into the chicken soup, if it's 60 times amount is greater, it's bitul batul b'shishim. So you have that ruba de ruba. So that's how some explain. Becheskas tamei mesim, v'efshar lahaskin shemen tar. And that means, says the Shulchan Aruch, that it was impossible for them to prepare new pure oil unless Achiyav Ralam Shiva Yomim Miyom to Masam Viyom Echad, that they needed 7 days, right? The Shiva Nakim, the 7 clean days, the 7 days of waiting had to pass. They had to press the olives. The procedure to prepare the olives was Sikunam Lahotzi Mehem Shemet Tahor. In order for them, just practically speaking, you know what it was? In order for them to be able to have this process after their impurity because of Tamei Meis. So that's a 7-day period. You need a day to prepare it, you need a day to squash it, to squeeze them, and then to be able to prepare the olive oil. Very, very simple. So this is how some explain when we talk about the koyach, the possibility for which Shammai, beginning with day 8, knowing that the potential for which the oil is able to last is because he just understood that there is an impurity that is cleansing a cleansing process that culminates after 7 days. Very, very simple. That's the first opinion, that the Chashmonaim had to wait a week in order to purify themselves of the ritual impurity contracted by coming into contact with a human corpse, Tamei Meis. And since they had fought the war, everyone had just had such contact. Now, it wasn't everybody, but it was most likely. Everyone was a rogue majority, and so therefore was in need of this purification. And that's the first connection we see between the lighting, the kindling of the oil, and the victory, the battle, because they had to wait a certain amount of time. Now, the Shulchan Aruch also mentions a second reason, which he quotes the Ran, source number 24, V'aran Shem Kosov Shehaya Lahem Shem in Torah, Rochaik Arba Yomim, that the Ran says that the eight-day period was necessary, it was identified, it was appreciated. Why? For a different reason, completely. Why? Because the pure oil, was available at a distance of 4 days' travel, and the 8 days were necessary for the round trip. You didn't buy a one-trip ticket. You bought a round-trip ticket. You have to count the days that are necessary to get there and the days that are necessary to come back. Sof kol sof, you have 8 days. That's how the Beis Shammai knew it. That's why the miracle lasted for 8 days. Was the miracle able to last for 9 days? It could have been if that would have been the Ratzon Hashem, but it doesn't, because that was how many days were necessary for the miracle to last. Okay, so here you have the basics of here. You have the interesting observation that, unlike other situations, you can have different components of what we celebrate on Sukkot, on Pesach, of course, but the general theme is Simcha. The general theme is freedom. The general theme is Matan Torasenu, different ways of engaging in those themes. But Be'etzem, fundamentally, you have two themes here, whereas usually you have one. What are the two themes? The war, the miracle of the menorah, what is physical, what is spiritual. Now we understand that the first time here in Shulchan Aruch, in source 23, they're brought together in some level of understanding the eight-day component of it, why it is 8 days. But now what we're going to do is try to thread another connection. What is there, if there does exist, a connection between these two nisim, these two miracles? And why is it that so it seems that one is stronger, more emphasized than another? So we've seen that Hanukkah, of course, celebrates these two miracles, the war and the menorah. How do these two miracles combine in the single commemoration of the Festival of Lights and the lighting of the menorah? So which means, by just virtue of how this comes together, what we understand is really it's not necessarily that they're two commemorations necessarily meant to be independent, but they're meant to be combined, they're meant to come together. And that's why we are not neglecting the first, the military, by just simply saying it in shul and saying it at Birchas HaMazon, at benching. But we're going to see that there's a culmination that happens specifically with both of them coming together, a combustion, a synergy of both, when we light the menorah. And how does that come together? This is a beautiful Maharal. The Maharal says in Ner Mitzvah, in source number 25, basically the idea is that the miracle of the oil comes to, you know, disabuse us of the notion that the war was won through human effort alone. See, part of the problem is, and many times we have this isn't the only example, where you have, which means that by the strength of my own arms, by the power of my own might, this is the reason why we've been successful, why we are victorious. Maybe a person will think that just like in any other situation, you can have a miracle that can happen. You can have the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War. You can have the victory of the Chashmonaim over the Avana. Okay, there was, maybe they just had some good luck. Maybe they just had some better armament. Maybe the secret weapon against the powerful elephants and the powerful 50,000-man army, they figured out the David Goliath, formula worked. They figured out a pebble. They were able to strike the giant, and the giant was able to fell. So if that's the case, so what would happen, says the Maharal? That we have to disabuse ourselves of the notion that the war was won through human effort alone. Of course, there's what we call toil. Of course, there's something called hishtadlus. Of course, you have to be prepared. You have to know what to do. You have to have military intelligence and strategy and statistics. For sure, it goes without saying. But here's what he says. Ikar ma shekavu yimei Chanukah b'shvil shiyun tzoch minot tzichim es ha-yevanim rak shlo haya nirash haya kan azal neis al yidei neis. I mean, the essence of the establishment of the festival of Hanukkah was the military defeat of the Greeks. That was the essence of the establishment, right, of the Hanukkah story. Like, let's remember the Gemara. What does the Gemara say? That they were nitzchum, that they were successful. They found the Pach Shemen. But the essence, he says, the Kavu Yimei Hanukkah, what establishes the festival, the days of Hanukkah, was the military defeat. Let's make no mistake. However, Shalahaya Nire Shayakan Nitzchum. The problem is, it was not apparent to them that this victory was a miracle. Who would know that that's necessarily a miracle? And so therefore, in Bolt, so lefichach, nasa hanes al yidei Neirus HaMenorah, sheyedu shehakol haya b'neis min Hashem Yisbarach. You know why the miracle focuses on the lighting of the menorah, the kindling of the lights? The miracle of the lights of the menorah was done for them so that they should know, that we should know, the generation should know that everything was a miracle from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Everything is a miracle from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's a very powerful line. The fichach nasa hanes al yidei neirus hamenorah sheyedu shehakol haya b'neis min Hashem. Which means shehakol. When we say shehakol niyeh bidvaro, it means that everything is niyeh bidvaro. Shehakol, that every miracle is. It's actually supposed to be a reminder. And actually, here's what's lacking. If a person simply lights the menorah and doesn't actually use that as the facilitator to remind ourselves of the other part of the miracle that might have otherwise been overlooked, because it seems to be teva, seems to be nature, seems to be that, okay, I was able to just be stronger sometimes. You know, the Rocky Balboas of the world are able to knock out the Dragos of the world, are able to be stronger, are able to find a way. It's a military campaign that would have looked statistically unlikely a success, but it's able to happen. It's not necessarily a miracle. Maybe to some, of course, it is, but to others, maybe it's not. Shakol haya b'neis, everything is an ace. And so therefore, keeping with the essential theme of the Hanukkah miracle, which came to demonstrate which we understand, the continued divine intervention, hashkacha pratis, none of this would have been without divine intervention into worldly affairs. So it's fitting that the principal miracle was specific to the menorah rather than to the war. Why? Because the menorah is a spiritual essence that symbolizes Torah, and it was only here that the truly revealed miracle took place, shattering the regular order of nature. Everything else could have been defined as just simply nature. There's a spiritual battle. Why was it, Chazal says, the Maral, that they established this holiday of 8 days? Very, very simply. They did it because of the military victory. What would be if we just celebrated this military victory? We would just maybe think that it's the strength of my might. That's the reason why it's able to be. And so what we have is, we have two things. Number one is understanding that the principal miracle is the menorah, the lighting of it. Not necessarily as that's the reason why it was established. That's not what the Maharal says. But you know why? Is it's a facilitator to know what the principal reason is. But of course, there's another reason. That the menorah represents the spiritual essence, the symbol, the symbolizing of the Torah, symbolizing the ruchnius, the spirituality, the eternity, eternal light, the Mesorah tradition. And it is where it seems to be the revealed miracle, where it takes place. Wow, a pach shemen, it has the chesim of the Kohen Gadol. It was munach, it was hidden, it was concealed, it was not revealed. And now, wow, it's able to last not one, but eight. So now this is the order of nature of Teva Lukus, which is now seemingly shattered, even though even nature is miraculous, right? We know that nature, that the gematria of Teva is HaTeva is Elokim. Why? Because there's nothing that's outside of miracle. There's nothing outside of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's creation. And so therefore, it shatters what we know as sunrise, sunset, that there's wind, there's rain, there's sun, there's all of the elements that we take for granted that's what we call nature. Now, the Greeks desired not the destruction of the temple, per se, as we mentioned earlier, but its defilement. They could care less. The destruction, they just wanted to defile it. They didn't mind if the Jews continued to exist as long as they were disconnected from any spiritual elevation, right? So therefore, you know, as long as your temple, if you're going to use your temple to play cards, if you use your temple to, you know, play jacks, mahjong, you want to use your temple to have, you know, bingo nights, no problem. Gesunte hey. To have spiritual elevation, you have tefillah, you're going to have ruchnis. Not for me, not for us. The miracle came to restore this elevation, which is manifest more than anywhere else, of course, in the base of the Mikdash, which is why, you know, the reconstituting, rededicating of the temple is essential, because the essential place where we're able to have that worship is in our temple, in our base of Mikdash, in our shul, in our Mikdash Ma'at, which is the centerpiece, the place. As of course, we know in Shulchan Aruch, the Halach, the Rambam writes as well, you know, that the highest place, most elevated place in your town is where the base HaKnesses is supposed to be. This is what the law in Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam codifies this in Hilchos base HaKnesses, which is what? Why? Because everybody should be able to see it. It's the most elevated. It's the highest place. You should be able to see it from any location. I remember when I took a trip a number of years ago to Eastern Europe, and I was able to go to some of the holy famous places of yesteryear, in Radin, where the Chavetz Chaim lived. I was able to go to Volozhin, I was able to go to Mir in Poland, to these places. So I remember just having not only the extraordinary feeling of huge satisfaction to be able to walk into these places that were these, you know, citadels of Torah and erudite personalities that were able to scribe scores and scores of literature, which we study today, but also was just like the the home of the Masorah for years and years before the Shoah, of course, we know. So I was so excited to go to these places, but I was also devastated to see what they became. I remember when I went into the yeshiva of Volozhin. Hey, look at the yeshiva of Volozhin. So yeshiva of Volozhin today is a bakery. So I remember I went into the back. I asked the owner if I was able to just please go to the back where I found, through an interpreter, that that's where the Beis Medrash was. That's where the study hall was. And they're baking, you know, breads and all different types of treats. And here I'm standing by the window, which probably was near, hopefully, the Aron Kodesh. I was just saying to Hillel, crying, thinking about, wow, what a holy place, and look what it became. I remember going to the yeshiva of the Chofetz Chaim in Radin, Poland. My goodness, it became a playhouse. It was so painful to see. There's a playhouse. The Mir Yeshiva in Poland also became a postal house. It's a post office. So it's also very painful. So it's extraordinary to be there to see it, but it's also very sad to see what it became. So this idea that they were fine, the Greeks, the Ivanim, they didn't necessarily care per se of the destruction. That was just their way of defiling. It was the way of just simply saying the very strong message, which is, as long as you're willing to exist, no problem. As long as you're disconnected from any spiritual elevation, that is all that we care about. That's so important to understand. This is how these two come together. But we're going to see even more where this is so, because there's a relationship between miracles and nature. What is nature? Nature is the victory of the war. What is miracle? It's the miracle of the finding of the cruse of oil. So the miracle of the oil reveals the miraculous nature of the military success, which we understand this is how they fuse together. They fuse together is that even though we would think, as we should, both of them are miraculous, and maybe when we speak about them standalone, they are, and that's why Alanisim Valporkon identifies and delineates and articulates all of the nuances of what makes it miraculous. Meaning, if it wasn't that we are so specific in how we say what we say, maybe we just think, okay, it was a very powerful band of very strong people. Judah Maccabee was a very tough guy in the Chashmonaim. They were just very, very strong. We have in Chumash Avraham Avinu, he fought a whole host of kings, and he had a whole army that he was battling, and he was successful. Maybe this is no different. So here we see that actually what's happening here is that the revealed miracle is what we call that which is megale, that was not concealed, that was revealed. So that revealed miracle, the purpose of that revealed miracle is to then reveal also the, what seems to be the concealed miracle, what's a little bit not so recognized, what's less easily to recognize. And this is the pattern of miracles, the open flaunting of nature comes to help us appreciate the divine intervention latent in other regular workings of the world. You know, when is a miracle in our lives? Maybe a person will say, like, I don't see a miracle. I don't see things. I wish I could see, you know, like the generation saw in the desert, the man, the Anane Hakovo, the fire, the pillars of fire and clouds, the splitting, of course, to the sea, the thunderous, miraculous sounds of the Makos, the plagues. What do we understand? Look at the Ramban tells us at the end of Parshas Bo. Parshas Bo is when things are heating up and all of the Makos, the plagues, like the macro levels, the macro miracles reveal the micro miracles, right? There's the big, large ones, the open ones, the undeniable ones, the unfathomable ones. Oh, wow, can't believe that has to be a miracle. You know what it does? Says the Ramban, look at Source 26. I mean, Anisim Hagidolim, Mefarsimim, you know what happens? Very simply, once you introduce and indoctrinate yourself to understand that there's obvious miracles, that there are things that, wow, took place in our history, that that is a miracle, that is not disputed as a miracle. You know, it comes, says the Ramban, Nachmanides tells us, then you come to realize now, there must be that there are nistarim miracles. What's a hidden miracle? Maybe digestion, maybe secretion, maybe the fact that the earth spins on an axis. If it were just to move just a quarter of a decimal off its axis, what would be choshech, shemesh, sunrise, sunset? I mean, the miracles that we have and experience day in and day out in macro nanoseconds is extraordinary. It's true, we might not be as plugged into them as we would be the hamfarsimim, the ones that are gedolim, those public, undeniable ones. So what the Ramban is teaching us is that all that happens in daily life should not be seen as nature, even though it's called nature. But really, everything is in the world of Elokus, in the world of miracle of Nais. In fact, Dr. Akiva Tatz writes in Living Inspired, he has a whole section about what Nais is, what miracle is. The word Nais, not only does it come to mean miracle, but it actually has another meaning. The other meaning of the word Nais is banner, B-A-N-N-E-R. what's a banner? A banner is the, you know, your team that you support. You raise your banner, the flag. What's a nace? The flag. A nace is that we're raising a banner. This activity, this event, this circumstance, this reality raises the banner that the Ribono Shel Olam is here. So the Ramban is teaching us that all that happens in daily life should not be seen as nature or the regular functioning of the world. Rather, we should understand from this Ramban that all aspects of our lives, all aspects of life should be seen as miraculous. Part and parcel of Hashkacha Pratis. What's Hashkacha Pratis? Hashkacha Pratis is divine intervention that is always with us. Now, we say these words, divine intervention, Hashkacha Pratis. What's the key word there? Hashkacha we know is a Kadosh Baruch Hu. What's Pratis? Pratis is the small matter. The divine intervention is Pratis here is singular, private, small. That the Rebbe Hashem is as involved in our lives as Hashkacha Klolius. What's Hashkacha Klolius? Hashkacha Klolius is constellation, sun, solar system. You know, the fact that there's gravity, there's like these major macro things, right? That's what we think that's called Hashkacha Klolius. But Hashkacha Pratis is even the kernel, the little piece of rice, the kernel of sand on the shore. Even you, one person, everything about you, every sinew, every vein, every, you know, vascular part of your insides, your intestine, every bit of you is Hashkacha Pratis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu concerns himself with that, and that's no less a miracle. That is miraculous. The same HaKadosh Baruch Hu who made a small flask of oil burn for 8 days is the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu who brought about the military victory versus the Greeks. And that is the union between the two. One is to facilitate the other. And one, which is easier to overlook, which is less to appreciate, is able to be focused on when we focus on the larger miracle. Now, the fact that sometimes we don't do that, we're focusing on whether your donut is filled with jelly or custard or chocolate or whatever. No. We have to think about the oil as a facilitator of, sure, that was a nes nigla, but there's also something called nister. Nister, what's nister? Nister was concealed. Concealed is that there was no less miracle in the military victory over the Greeks, and that's why we mentioned, that's what we're supposed to think of. Not that there's two different things, but the theme here is that there's nes. It's a zman of nisim. It's a time of miracles. It's a time of realizing that these miracles come together and there's this fusion of both of them that are two spokes within the same header. Now, the lights of the menorah, which of course we know, teach us to look around and to notice the nisim that are going on all the time. That is the permanence of the Ner Chanukah. It's not just that it's meant to be temporary, but it's meant to be the permanence of the miracles that we then now are on an ongoing basis able to recognize more freely, more regularly, more accurately, because now we're attuned. Our mishkafayim, our glasses, our goggles, our focus is razor sharp. That's what Pinkus writes, or Shimshon Pinkus and his entries on Hanukkah, where he explains where miracles occur on a daily basis. But what's the difference? Yeshem is Olim Nishol Ketsa Mevinim Es Nusacha Tfilah Bayamim Ohem Bazman Hazeh. We have to be attuned to them. He asks very simply, these words in Alanisim, Bayamim Ohem Bazman Hazeh, right? Alanisim Val Porkon, Bayamim Ohem Bazman Hazeh, Bayamim Ohem, got it. But Bazman Hazeh, what? We see miracles today? Ech Bazman Hazeh, he says. Look at Source 27. Bayamim Shanu Chaim, Beim Raim Nisim. We these days, where we hear stories about how Kol Siporim Shal Nisim Heim Al Iroim Shukar Be'Avar. What does that mean? These things happen in the past. What are they? Past things? Kriyas Yamsuf. Am Yisrael Over B'Sulchayam Be'Abosha. Come on, you're going to say that Bayamim Heim? Got it. That I'll say. But Bazman Hazeh? What's Bazman Hazeh? Bazman Hazeh? There's no splitting of the seas. All these events that took place when they were now on dry land, that's then. The miracles of the Jews entering into Eretz Yisrael, Nisya Knisa L'Eretz Yisrael, Vanisim Shayu B'Beis HaMikdash, that's then. Now? Come on, what is this? Rapinkus asks his famous, of course, important question. What? So, Ech Madua Raka Doro Sahem, Ro Nisim, V'Anu Lo Roim B'Yamim, Yisra'ach Shal Nisim. What does that mean? They saw miracles. We don't see miracles. Do we see miracles? Bechirak Lador Hamidbar. Those are the ones who saw it. Hazchus Leros. They were able to see Nisei Shemayim. Velonu Ein Es Hazchus Hazu. We do not have the same miracle, the same merit as they had. So how do we say Bazman Hazeh? So here we go. Bold. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Manig Es HaOlam B'Darchei HaTeva. Yes. The Ribono Shel Olam, God Almighty, does govern the world through a system of nature. But Va'af benisim amitim. What does that mean? Also, by actual nisim amitim means that there are actual miracles that take place. Miracles occur all around us. Saviv kol adam karim nisim shel mamish. Miracles occur around us daily. And yet, b'chol yom. But and yet, what happens? People are not ach b'nei ha'adam einam moshpim ve'einam koitlim as mecholos avivam. What's the problem? Is that people do not find themselves affected. They don't realize what's happening around them. Now, maybe that happens because of the way they're packaged. They're packaged in the world of Teva, and we're accustomed to sunrise, sunset. We're accustomed to sounds the way they are heard. So maybe that's the reason why we're accustomed to them. And maybe it could very well be that even those who lived in the time of the desert and Knesset Eretz Yisrael and Beis HaMikdash, they themselves maybe also became used to the miracles. I mean, obviously, there's commentary abound about how the even those holy generations who saw Nisim v'Niflos, they can complain to Moshe Rabbeinu about the man. They can complain about the fact that there's no be'er, there's no well to nourish their thirst. I mean, v'chule, the complaining was extraordinary, of course. So maybe they also became germane to the miracles as they were taking place. But we have to understand, ein kodlim v'chala sevivam kifi why. The reason why is because just as certain sound waves, but this is what we have to think about. We have to understand that there are certain miracles that take place, even that they're packaged in the world of Teva. They're miracles around us. Let's just stop and pause and just think about them. When we think about them, we realize that there are more. Because as much as we know, we're limited in what we don't know. The little fraction, minimal amount of information that we have pales in comparison to what we have out there as a possibility of what we can learn. So just as certain sound waves, he writes, exist in the world's atmosphere and can only be detected by special instruments, right? So we know that also, likewise, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Maspik L'chol Adam, Maspik Nisim Gambas Manazes. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes, provides man with plenty of miracles, even by Yemim Ahem. Ach, HaKushi V'Havodah Shalom Ahem, HaYecholes LePesach Ayin Roe V'Oizen Shema. Which means that the challenge of our time, the task of our day, is ayin roa. What's ayin roa? An eye that sees an ozen shoma. It's quoting the Mishnah Perkei Avos. And a person who sees and a person who hears, that means that a person who sees and hears all that's happening around us in a saviv, in our area, in our surroundings, what's happening around us, you'll be able to see. Meaning, that just comes to prove that, yes, there are so many things that are happening around us. But the problem is that our eyes are not open. And we think that our eyes are open, but our eyes are not open. Our eyes have to be open. Our ears have to be listening and attuned to. And when we change our frequency of what we see and what we hear, then we're going to see the world in a totally, totally new light. In a very, very simple, basic example. I remember, the transition I personally had when I became a congregation pulpit rabbi. I don't know, I found that just my travels, when I'd go on an airplane, I was just like looking around. I wasn't even necessarily trying to look for it, but because I was, now tasked with speaking so regularly on Shabbos, seeing experiences as they would play out right before me, I don't know, I'd be on a plane and just somehow a story came, a conversation happens, some circumstance plays out right before my eyes, and I'm able to, last week I was on a plane, and it turns into a whole drusha. Why? Because you have I had a focus that was transition, status change, that then made me just more aware, more keen to see. And this is obviously a super, super simple example of so many. When we see things and look at things, you could look at the birth of a child, you could see the beautiful vistas, you can go see the beautiful sunrise, sunset, you can go look at the ocean, you can look at the skies without a cloud today on a beautiful day here in South Florida. Roa, v'ayin roa, v'ozen shomat, not to be limited by what we see, not to just think that we've already been conscripted to what we see is what it is, or to what we hear is what it is, but to open our minds, our hearts, our eyes, our ears to think of it in just a different way. And the last source here for today, and then of course I'll take all your questions, is the last one is in Michtav Melio. These are obviously a little bit different sources than Shas, sources of the Ran, the Ritva, the Rashba, Tosas, Rashi, etc. But these are more hashkafic, but of course quoting them. Rabbi Elio Dessa, Michtav Melio, writes that the results of one's efforts are also miraculous. You think that just again, but that the Zeas Apecha Toich Lechem curse, by the sweat of your brow, will you have to earn a livelihood? You're going to go and you're going to work. So someone will think like, like, you know, because I work so hard, and that's the reason why I'm successful. There's a reason why you're successful. The reason why you're successful is because Kadosh Baruch Hu made you successful. There are plenty of, you know, people that did not excel in certain academics that have excelled in other areas, in business and finances and sports and recreation, whatever it is. And there are others who, you know, could have been celebrated, decorated, you know, students in Ivy League universities who just struggled to make ends meet. Nothing is a formula of absolute, this is the path this world will be. Of course, hishtadlus and predictions and what you can do to put yourself in the best position to be successful, that goes without saying. Obviously, that's the tircha, the effort, the toil, the hishtadlus, that's formulaic. But here he explains like this. Zeo soda shel neis Chanukah. This is the soda. What's soda? Not soda, sodo. Soda is the soda, is the secret. This is the soul. This is the remez. This is, we're going to find. This is the heart, the soul. Shal neis Chanukah. This is the, it's a nitzchum hama'atim ala rabim. Hayanira, you should know that the miracle of the few of the many, it seems to be nira b'derech hateva. It is nimna. It's not possible. It's not likely. It's meineya. It's just not possible b'derech hateva. It just doesn't happen. Despite this, Lamar Zos, his chazku achashmanayim itoich hechl. What do they do? They're machlit shal ein breira. What do they say? There's no choice. They had no choice but to fight. Mishum kach zochel siyata dishmaya lamayla midarach hateva. Here you have teva, you have nature. But ein breira. Ein breira means that I have to succeed. I have to accomplish. There was a lot on the line. It was existential. Existential was the battle that the Hashmonaim faced, and so therefore they had no choice but to battle the Greeks. You think that they thought that they were going to be necessarily successful? The answer is they did. You know why? Because they knew that the Kadosh Baruch Hu was fighting the battle with them. As they, Vatem Tach HaRishon, you go out, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu, you, everyone should be quiet. You just go into the Yam, into the Suf, and I will battle for you. Right? That's what we understand when you have that spiritual chutzpah. You realize that ain't Breiro. There's no choice. Mishum Kach, because that Zachal Siyat HaDishmaya, when you put your heart and your soul and you go in at full throttle, says the Michtam Eliel, the results of one's efforts are also miraculous. It's just a function of how far and how committed you are to what it is. Neis Chanukah Moir Lanu, the miracle of Chanukah teaches us that She'ein Makom Liyush, that there's no place for despair. Where? B'makom Shenirim Hadrochim Chasumim Mgvulim B'derech Hateva. There's no room for despair in situations where the options seem closed or naturally limited. Right, that wall seems too high. That ambition seems just impossible. That accomplishment is just unlikely. There is just no chance. A person has to, what we understand from the Chashmonaim, from their victory, and then the miracle of a human man, woman, our encounter, our engagement, the things we consider ourselves to do, is ametz b'yoser kevan she'ein breira. That's what we understand. There's no other choice. We have to be successful. We have to teach our children Torah. We have to kindle the flame in their hearts. We have to hold the morality, the ethics, the values that we know that the Torah demands of us and that the world is waiting for, that the chaos that we experience is a function of which it is bereft of all those values. That's our responsibility. Yis ametz biyoser kevon she'ein breira. If we say the same thing like the Chashmonaim, like they said ein breira, you know what happens? There are new gates of divine assistance that will open for us. That is a miracle. It's not just because you have 15 degrees and hours of training. Of course, that's so, so important. But that's maybe largely because you said, Ein Brera, I'm doing this. I'm going to continue on my effort, my dream. I want to be a doctor, even though I have to take a botany class. I have to take a class on plants. But the reality is that's the curriculum. That's the course. That's what it is. Of course, when you're in graduate school, when you're in any, you're learning in yeshiva. So you have to learn. Cheskas Abatim is exciting. But if you're going to learn some parts of Maseches Erevin, it's very intricate. It's very complicated. It's very complex. Maybe it's not exciting. It's maybe not going to make Lahavdil a million times over on Netflix miniseries. Okay, not everything in life is that way. It's just the steadfast Ein Breira. I have no choice. I have an army of lots of people that represent power and strength, whether it's the Greeks, whether it's the Romans, whether it's anything or any element that we face. We are like the Chashmonaim. And who said the Maccabee? Me, Hashem Eli, who is with me? Says the Kodesh Baruch Hu, you join with me. There is nothing that can stand in your way. There's no victory that is not able to be celebrated. Yis ametz biyoser We also be zocha to that. And that's what we understand. Shmoni mechanika melamdim osano. But these 8 days tell us and teach us sharaha el yoina, that the lessons of these heavenly blessings that lights up our hearts with the success of our daily endeavors. Shemira el toch lepinoisav benaseinu al yidei shtalaseinu b'meh. That the strength that we have, the success that we have, what we're able to do, which means it comes, the daily endeavors is in fact a miracle beyond our natural abilities. And so therefore, even if it is, if a person, I don't know, lands a new job, a person should not, therefore not pin his achievement on his good resume, their good interview, their good looks. So these might, of course, be factors and help that person get the job. But the underlying force behind all this is Hashgacha Pratis. This is the Ratzon Hashem, divine will, that this person should get the job. In a sense, getting a job is a miracle, right? It's a nice. It's not just because, you know, all those other things. Miracle is an expression of mazel. Makom, mem, zayin, lamin. Makom, zman, makom, zman, and lashon. To be in the right place at the right time and say the right thing. Hashgacha Pratis. It is divine. It's part of the divine intervention. That is with us always. And this same applies to us in all accomplishments and in all areas of our lives. However, we should not deduce that achievements do not require human input. That is, shtalus is critical. So if they were right, because if they were are all miracles, then we can simply put our feet up and rely on divine intervention. Good. What do I have to do? I could stay home. I could have a nice, relaxing day, because after all, everything is a miracle. But we know, of course, ain't same chanal an ace. We have to the precept that we can't rely on that. We have to put our efforts forth. On the contrary, the Chanukah miracles teaches us, if nothing else, the Chashmonaim, they didn't say, okay, you know what, all these people are coming our way, not good, not good, not good. Let's just rely on a miracle. No, no, no. They got there, fought these formidable foes. Miracles were wrought for us only after human input, human involvement was required and was successful. So here, just to review, then we'll take some questions. So again, we have these two components of commemoration, the military victory, the Alan Nisan, which specifies all the details, how the miracle worked, from Matasio Salmi, on source number 21. It's not the what, but it's the how the miraculous came to be. Because of their righteousness, that's why the Chashmonaim were able to merit that. The miracle of the menorah, source 22, famous Gemara Maseches Shabbos, Bama Madlikin. This is how was the miracle as we know it. Lasted for 8 days. Beis Yosef mentioning, number one, that's the time of spiritual impurity because of Tomei Mace. Second one, he's quoting the Ran in source 24 because of times of travel. What's the connection between the two? The Maharal explains that the miracle of the world comes to disabuse us of the notion that the war was won through human effort. That's significant and so important. That's why you have both. That's the relationship, says the Ramban in source 26. Of open miracles and hidden miracles. One is supposed to facilitate the other. And this is one that makes it more readily available to our knowledge, all miracles. And that's what Shimshon Pinkus writes in source 27 and in his essay on Hanukkah, that miracles occur on a daily basis. Just the problem is we need to be sensitive enough to see them. We have to be attuned. And that's the idea of what we see and what we do. It should be, even though Derech HaTeva seems sometimes to be opposite. It's an ayin rov, ozen shoma, the eyes, the ears that we have should be attuned and adjust. And therefore, we should also finally, we learn together that the results of one's efforts are also miraculous. And when we appreciate that, we realize that ein soim chanal hanes, human effort is necessary. But when you have that success is all bashkacha pratis. We daven, we pray for divine assistance, divine intervention. We should be matzlich in every area. But it's realizing that Hanukkah, while there is a huge amount of mechanical halacha, how you do it and when you light, and with what do you light, and what's the order that you light, and how many people light in your house, and which oil and wax, and what foods you eat, and why you eat them, what it commemorates. For sure, it's all systemic, and it's much of it known, and much of it has been repeated over history, over time and time, year after year. But here we have a little bit of a deeper understanding. With this deeper understanding, with the nuance of what just the Shas Sugya part of it, as we learned over the past previous weeks, and some of the Hashkafi here, we have the fusion of both of these ideas, where these miracles really wildly commemorate two components. Really, they're one idea, Hashkacha Pratis as one. And we think about it as we light our candles, light our menorahs. Perhaps it gives us more meaning and a deeper appreciation for what this festival of lights truly, truly is. All right, I will open up the floor, please. Feel free. Just don't forget to unmute yourselves. Questions, comments, concerns, worries, Hanukkah related, Purim related, Pesach related, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah. Let's go. What's in your heart and your soul? What are you thinking? Don't be shy.